Hello and welcome into the KE Report. I'm your host, Shad Markowitz, and I'm speaking today with John Rubino, founder of the Dollar Collapse website. And John, it's always great to have you on the show and get your thoughts on what's going on in these crazy markets, whether it's the macro picture in the U.S. equities or the commodity sector or the currency markets. The last couple of weeks have been really volatile, and that's been evident in the VIX, the S&P 500 volatility instrument, how much it surged last week, and a lot of markets whipsawed back and forth. What do you make of the current setup we saw to close up November and head into December?
Yeah, this has been one of those really volatile times, huh, Shad? If the big U.S. averages aren't up or down by 2% on a day, that's a boring day now by current standards. And, you know, besides volatility in the stock price indexes, the yield curve has been flattening, cryptos flash crashed. And I think it's all because the Fed is actually making noises about being serious about tightening. And what happens when they actually raise rates? They haven't actually done it yet, and we're getting this kind of volatility. So if and when they actually try to raise interest rates, you would think the volatility would be even more extreme. So this might be just the beginning of an even more extreme period if the Fed is actually serious about trying to tighten. You know, I actually think they can't, though. Because if we're seeing this from just the hint of tapering and maybe somewhere out there in the indeterminate future, 50 basis point increase in the Fed funds rate, when they actually do try to do those things, the financial markets will just blow up on them. So that's a pattern that's been repeating over the past couple of decades, where the Fed tries to tighten and then the stocks blow up and the Fed goes back to extreme ease. And the difference this time, though, is that we're already at extreme ease. So where do we go from here if the Fed has to panic liquefy collapsing financial markets? So I think this might be the final endpoint when everybody realizes that that's all there is. They're just going to have to, create 20% more currency every year and have negative interest rates. And that's just our future forever. And then I think all bets are off for a lot of different asset classes.
Well, John, that brings up an interesting point because they also announced recently in the last week or so that they're tossing around the idea of speeding up their taper. And a lot of people say, wow, they're really getting hawkish and they're really tightening. But the problem is they're not really tightening anything. They're just spending less. And I think we may have mentioned this last week that all tapering is buying less bonds than they were previously buying. And they're still expanding their balance sheet. They haven't gotten to the actual hiking of rates yet, which is slated for the middle of next year. Is there going to be a checkmate moment where people in the general markets finally realize that, wow, even if inflation tempers some and goes from 6% down to 5% or maybe 4%, there's no way they can hike rates up to 4% or 5% or get ahead of inflation. So when that moment of realization comes next year, do you think we'll see the real taper tantrum or the real volatility start when they get to that point where they actually say, okay, we're going to start hiking?
Oh, yeah. If we get to the point where they actually do start hiking, then the financial markets will just blow up. And see, the thing is, the Fed knows this. They've got 6% inflation right now, and they know if they don't do anything about it, it's liable to accelerate because everybody will start panic buying everything in sight because they assume prices are going to go up. You know, once that kind of mindset takes hold, then things tend to run out of control. Fed knows that. That's what they get if they don't do anything. But if they do try to restrain inflation, the financial markets will just collapse because who wants to own stocks at absolute record high levels when you can get 4% on a bond, right? All of a sudden, stocks are much less attractive at that point. And in a rising interest rate environment, you just bail on the scary assets and you go to safe assets. So, but if it's an inflationary environment at the same time, the old safe assets like bonds are no longer safe. So what do you do? You know, the market will just go crazy if the Fed tries to tighten. And the Fed knows that too. So they're in this place where nothing really has happened yet. But whatever they do, it's guaranteed to be wrong in an absolutely cataclysmic way. So they sit tight, inflation spikes and things blow up, they try to restrain inflation, interest rates go up and everything tanks, and either way, they're kind of right now in the calm before a storm that they know is coming. So I feel bad for them in one sense, because they must be experiencing some real existential angst right now, knowing that that's coming. But on the other hand, you know, it's their fault. They blew up the world, these guys in charge of monetary policy. And anything that comes their way, they deserve it, in my opinion, because their incompetence is going to be something that historians will be writing about for the next 100 years.
Well, and there's no doubt that the proliferation of MMT, modern monetary theory, which has the backdrop of we can print as much money as we want, and it really doesn't matter because they don't see that as actually creating inflation. And the definition of inflation is creating a more money supply. They see it just the opposite. The MMT proponents see it as it's just the lubrication in the system, and the real value is the network, the business system, growth, and keeping that money circulating, which punishes savers that want to save for their future, and it punishes things like the safe haven idea. But clearly we've now got inflation, and they've admitted it's not transitory. So do you think that there's going to be a reckoning that, hey, if we have to jump on this and fight inflation, a lot of people are saying it could actually lead to an inflationary depression. And there's other people arguing with the stronger dollar that we see and with automation and people not working as much and robotics coming in, that we actually may see a deflationary event. What do you make of the swirl of different ideas that we're seeing out there in the marketplace right now?
Well, that is one of the funny things, that the dollar is actually pretty strong right now, even though we've got 6% or so inflation, depending on the measure that you use. And part of the reason for that is that the world outside the U.S. is in even worse shape than here. So when there's trouble in the U.S., it has a bigger impact on a lot of other countries, which makes their currencies less valuable. You know, people come here with capital to get away from the turmoil that's in the rest of the world, even if the U.S. causes that turmoil. That's the really weird dilemma that exists in the financial world today. And it's temporary, though, because we will reach a point where no matter how bad things are in the rest of the world, things are going to be so objectively bad in the U.S. that the dollar is not going to be interesting either. And then capital flows into safe haven assets. See, that's the next thing. Right now, as long as the dollar is seen as a safe haven asset, that puts a lid on the other safe haven assets, the ones that would more logically be attracting capital right now. But the time will come when people realize that the U.S. has problems that are so serious and that really can't be solved via monetary policy or fiscal policy or any policy, then, you know, the dollar starts to fall dramatically against real stuff. It might still be strong against the euro, but that's, you know, that's a meaningless measurement. But it will fall against the real things that people are using their dollars to buy, and then that's basically accelerating inflation. And then all bets are off because there are no tools left to fix any of this. And the only people who get through this in good shape are the people who just didn't play the game, who did not load up on financial assets and trust the government to manage those financial assets correctly. But everybody who trusts a government that is doing this kind of stuff to its finances ends up being hurt really badly in the long run.
Yeah, and it's an interesting environment seeing the dollar as the safe haven because it does buoy it against the other currencies. And so when people look at the dollar index, they think, well, wow, look how strong the dollar is. But then when you think about the CPI reading, the consumer price index, prices going up 6% on average means your dollars are buying a lot less of everything you want. So that's clearly the inflation is the stronger pull versus the strength of the dollar. But as far as safe havens, gold has not, and people have knocked it for not performing as well as they think it should have in this inflationary environment. And we heard comments, John, that oil and energy stocks were really the better inflation hedge. And they've had an amazing year. But oil just pulled back about 22% over the last few weeks, whereas gold only pulled back about 5%. And then one more thing to throw in the mix of assets that people were calling a safe haven or an inflation hedge was Bitcoin and the cryptos. And we've seen a pretty big tumble in Bitcoin from 69,000 just a few weeks back, and it dropped as low as 42,000 over the weekend. So that's a 30 to 40% crash right there. The question is, are any of these things inflation hedges, or should they even be thought of in that sense?
Well, lots of things can go up in an inflationary environment, but they do it for different reasons. You know, cryptocurrencies are basically tech stocks. Don't think of them as money yet. So there might come a point in time when they are money and they have a role in the global monetary system. But right now they're basically, dot-coms all over again. They trade just like 1990s dot-coms. And because of that, you can't really associate them with inflation in any correlation sense. You know, they might go up or they might go down during an inflationary period. But that has very little to do with where they'll end up in the monetary system someday in the intermediate term future. Same thing with industrial commodities. You know, yeah, oil can go up in an inflationary period, but it can also crash. It, you know, it depends on how many people are driving cars and what other uses there are for oil and stuff like that. It's determined by the need for it in the industrial economy. Same thing with lumber. You know, you could say there were a couple of years there where you could say lumber was a phenomenal inflation hedge because it went up five times faster than anything else. And then it crashed back down, you know. So those things, they might be good things to invest in an inflationary period, but they're not inflation hedges in the way that sound money is. And gold is basically just money that governments can't inflate away. Therefore, over long periods of time, it protects your purchasing power. What it does this month or next month is totally meaningless to the fact that, you know, it was $270-some an ounce U.S., at the beginning of the century. Now it's $1,700-some. It has done a brilliant job over that time of protecting your purchasing power against a depreciating dollar. And any time period you want to choose, you see the same process at work. Unless you bought it right at the peak of a couple of its bubbles, which that's pretty tough timing if you did, but otherwise, gold has tended to preserve its purchasing power over long periods of time. And that's what an inflation hedge does. It's not, oh, inflation was 6% this month and gold was supposed to go up 6% to exactly offset it. That's not how that works. But look at it over long periods of time and you see that it does its job brilliantly and continues to do so. So gold isn't a thing you buy because you think you're going to get a massive capital gain in the short run. It's a thing you buy so that your kids are guaranteed to have at least this much purchasing power 20 or 30 years in the future. Now, if you want to make capital gains and really blow away inflation in the short run, it's the mining stocks that you want in the precious metal space, because they will tend to do that. If gold is going up, the mining stocks will go up even more. Again, not this week, not necessarily this month. You know, they don't necessarily correlate day to day or anything, but over, you know, 3 to 5 years, the mining stocks will do considerably better than gold if gold is doing well. And that's where you get your big capital gains in the precious metal space.
That's very well stated, John, and it's a key distinction that gets lost in some people when we talk about the precious metals space, in that there's kind of two different drivers here. The hard money store of value aspect of gold is a lot different than the speculative nature of the mining stocks. And within the mining stocks, there's even a lot of different subcategories, from the large producers to the developers to the royalty companies to the grassroots explorers, the prospect generators. There's a lot of different risk elements associated with each of those sectors. And we were talking off mic that at this point in the stage, with so much volatility, you're just looking at ways to generate income and ways to use the mining sector in a way to do that. I was wondering if you could share one of the ideas we had talked about off mic about how you're approaching the producers as a way with dividends to be able to generate income.
Yeah, as I get older, I'm for the first time in my life starting to think about, oh, you know, wouldn't it be nice to have something that pays interest or dividends or something? And I'm looking at the big gold producers. And it turns out that some of them, like take Newmont for an example, has a pretty decent dividend. It's 3% plus right now on the forward dividend for those guys, which is pretty good compared to a bank account. Still not very exciting, though. But what you can do with something like Newmont is also write covered calls on it. You buy it, and then you collect the dividend, but you write a covered call, which is an option that gives somebody else the right to take it away from you at a higher price, and they pay you a little bit for that right. And right now, with Newmont, you can own the stock, collect the dividend, and then write 2 month out covered calls for what right now would be an annualized 20% return. In other words, you do over the period of a year, you write covered calls 6 times and let them expire or whatever. And the cash you get from that comes to about 20% of the current stock price. And 20% is a pretty nice cash yield on what is a fairly safe investment. You know, a big gold miner that's generating free cash flow in an environment when gold should be going up, that's a reasonably safe stock. And 3% of change dividend is pretty good. And then, you know, you throw in the options, which actually lower the risk of owning the stock. And you're making money that you can retire on. You know, it doesn't take a huge nest egg if you can generate 20% on it to be able to make enough money to basically get by if you combine it with Social Security or whatever. So that's a reasonable strategy for a retiree right now who might otherwise be looking at like junk bonds or something like that in order to generate income. This is a way to do it more safely and possibly to make quite a bit more.
Well, I appreciate you sharing that idea with us. That's a solid strategy for people that want to generate some income. And 20% is nothing to sneeze at. It's actually outperforming a lot of the general markets or mutual funds out there. So I appreciate you outlining that strategy with our audience, John. And always appreciate having you on the KE Report. We'll be checking in with you again in another couple of weeks. But until then, have a great rest of the week.
Great. Thanks, Chad.